Welcome to Louisiana Lefty, a podcast about politics and community in Louisiana, where we make the case that the health of the state requires a strong progressive movement fueled by the critical work of organizing on the ground. Our goal is to democratize information, demystify party politics, and empower you to join the mission, because victory for Louisiana requires you. I'm your host, Linda Woolard. Our bonus season continues as I welcome the new chair of the Louisiana Democratic Party, Randall Gaines. Chair Gaines is a lifelong civil rights leader, a veteran, and a former three-term Democratic legislator for Louisiana's 57th House District. He's also previously chaired the Louisiana Legislative Black Caucus and the House Democratic Caucus. He now steps into the role of party chair for a four-year term, an essentially unpaid position with mountains to move to rebuild, rehab, and unify a party that's in a state of crisis. In some ways, this interview bookends a conversation we started with Louisiana Democrats in January of 2023, when we released the episode titled Demystifying Party Chair Elections. In other ways, that conversation will necessarily continue. While I've seen a range of reporting between spot-on accurate by those in attendance to pretty laughable spin by opinion writers, Randall and I don't get into specifics here about the meeting where he was elected chair. We also only briefly touch on the officers that have been elected to serve with him on the executive committee, but I promise a debrief or two will come. More immediately, I wanted you to have an opportunity to meet Chair Randall Gaines. If you haven't already come across him in his decades of political advocacy and community service, and to hear his initial plans and goals for our Louisiana Democratic Party. Chair Randall Gaines, thank you so much for joining me on Louisiana Lefty today.
Hey, it's totally my pleasure. It's a privilege for me to have an opportunity to dialogue with you. I appreciate all the assistance you gave in organizing leading up to the elections, and of course, your assistance with what I call a transformative outcome. You've always been a source of expertise, knowledge, and impactful activities for the party. We appreciate you.
Well, thank you, Chair Gaines. And I want to introduce you to folks who may not know who you are. You are the new chair of the Louisiana Democratic Party. You were just elected recently, and you've got a new executive committee. The officers were just elected. You've still got some other positions that will be voted on soon. But so for folks who don't know your history, can you briefly tell me, first of all, what was the first thing that ever got you interested in politics?
Actually, I was always, first of all, I was always interested in social justice. And politics is a mechanism to be able to advance good social justice causes, of course. But as far as social justice, I knew I wanted to become an attorney when I was 12 years old, particularly, and I think I mentioned this after watching the movie To Kill a Mockingbird, in which there was a racially discriminatory climate in this small town, and this minority individual was being falsely accused of something he didn't do. So I was 12 years old, and I decided, you know, this is something I want to do. And also watching the civil rights movement on black and white television during that time, not staying my age, but that watching Dr. King and the organizations that stood on the front lines and really won the rights for African Americans through suffrage and a lot of sacrifices. Many people lost their lives. But a lot of people don't know also is that that half the people during the civil rights movement, during the critical periods, half the people that were killed standing up for the rights of minorities were white. So it was about black and white. So it was a joint cause. It was always the right-minded people who stood for the right cause that came together. So it wasn't just a black movement, it was an American movement. So, and I watched Dr. King in Southern Christian Leadership Conference during the 60s, late 60s to lead that charge successfully. And as God would have it, ironically, because of my passions, I I was elected to serve as national vice president with Dr. Martin Luther King's nephew, who was the president at the time, and then I rose to the level. And now I'm currently serving as the vice chair of the national board. So, yeah, I've always had a commitment to social justice. But as far as politics, one of my lifelong goals from a young kid was to earn an election to the Louisiana legislature, which I did in 2011. And as I said, it's really just pushing a position to make transformative changes on a broad scale, because you can do it as an activist, but when you're in office, you not only do you have the compassion and the passion and the opportunity, but you also have the position and authority to make changes, which makes changes happen a lot faster when you have the authority.
And was 2011 the first office you ran for?
I actually ran for the DSCC in 2007 and won that.
Okay.
Yeah. So I joined the DSCC in 2007, and then I think in 2010 I was elected as vice chair for elected officials, which I held that until 2019, in which I was elected as a national committeeman.
Okay. And where are you originally from, Randall?
I'm from a small town in St. James Parish, Luxury, Louisiana. Small town of 5,000 people, and we're about midways between New Orleans and Baton Rouge.
Yeah. I've driven past it many times. Is that where you go see the, at Christmas time, the bonfire?
Yes, yeah. Yeah, exactly. The bonfires. And look, speaking of my small town, I was, I think I just finished college and was on my way to law school, and I hosted a political forum, which I was maybe 21 years old, and I hosted a political forum, and, I remember getting ready to give my speech at the forum. You know, it was in a gymnasium, had a crowd of people. It was like, make a local elected school board, town council, or something like that. And I remember trying to give my speech, and I had these cue cards, and I had it all neatly organized on these cards. And when I went up to the podium, the cards fell off and went all over the floor and got out without an order. And I said, now look, either you're going to stand here and say what you have to say in an effective way, or don't ever think about going into politics. So I was able to articulate the cause and the purpose. And I remember one of those teachers at the time, when I was walking out of the, I heard him say, when I was walking out of the gymnasium, he said, yeah, that boy's gonna be running things around here one day.
Aw, awesome. So you served in the legislature for 3 terms, right? And then you termed out and decided you were gonna run for state party chair. What made you decide to do that?
That decision was helped by a lot of requests. Well, I knew when I joined the party in 2010, I got to know John Bell, you know, our former governor. He was the caucus chair at the time. And when I decided to run for the legislature in 2011, John Bell selected about five of us around the state that he felt would ultimately be leaders in the party one day. They called us. I remember Buddy Leach talking about that when we won. They called us the Fab Five, and all of us won our seats. But during the campaign running in 2011, John Bell gave us a lot of support. He raised a lot of money. He was trying to. David Bitter raised about $1 million to reduce the number to elect more Republicans to the state legislature. We had 45 at the time. John Bell was determined to not to let that number get reduced. So he put a lot of money, and he hired some experts from all over the country to come down and work with us. And all of us were successful. And I just remember the lady that she had run congressional races in other states, and she was working with me. And she said, well, you're one of the people that John Bell sees as being the future of the party one day, and we have to get you elected. So, you know, that resonated in me. And I worked very hard with John Bell to establish and really at some point between 2011, the party actually started to grow. We built a strong base. There were 2,000. The party had 2,000. About 2014, 15 had 2,000 volunteers. And we saw the party moving in a positive trajectory, particularly once we got John Bell elected in 2015. We thought that was the turnaround period. But, you know, as things went, the Republican pushed back they really went all out to try to unelect John Bel Fields, an embarrassment to them for a Democrat to be elected in the Deep South in 2015. So they pushed back really hard against that in 2019. Of course, you know, that helped to cause John Bel to go into a runoff election with Responi, who was backed by Donald Trump. Donald Trump had come down two times prior to that October election, drove out about 100,000 more Republican votes. And I was called to Baton Rouge for a meeting at the Trial Lawyers Association. John Bel's campaign people were there, Connie Curry, who's over the Trial Lawyers Association, and I was Black Caucus Chair at the time. And they said, look, now let us explain something to you. They said, John Bel has gotten as many white votes as he's going to get. That, whatever number he received in October, that's basically what he's going to get in November. If he's going to win this election, it's going to be strictly based on the turnout of the Black vote. And that fell on my desk, of course. And I asked him for the money that I needed for radio and some other things that we needed. And I put the plan together, which included the faith-based leadership all over the state, included every senator, every sitting state senator and state rep in the state. And it also included some other support organizations like the union and the trial lawyers all over the state. So, and of course, I also include the universities that I talked to the presidents and they got the SGA involved. And we put, so I wrote the plan for it. And of course, as you know, we produced a record turnout vote, beat Donald Trump, and got John Bel elected as the only Democrat in the Deep South reelected as governor. And as I mentioned before, CBS News interviewed three people, which included me, myself, John Bel, and a mayor of New Orleans. But that just basically showed, and which is a direct line to what I've always believed in the Democratic Party, that we can do it. We can mobilize our voters. Our voters will vote. We just have to give them a reason to do that. And I've experienced that I've had other experiences with the party over the last 10 years that had what I would say really firmly established that fact is absolutely accurate and true.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you mentioned sort of the fight back and forth between the Democrats and the Republicans. And, you know, I was just speaking to a group of college students the other day, college Democrats, and was telling them, you know, one of the things I think we don't fully prepare Democrats for is that, I mean, my final phrase to them is, this is the fight of a lifetime. This comes and goes. You don't just make progress and then it's done and you can let it go. There's a constant ebb and flow to it. And if you're not constantly fighting back and pushing forward, we end up in situations like we're in now, where we have Republican takeover of all the state offices and supermajorities in the legislature. And it digs us a bit of a deeper hole, because now they're going to be doing things that we've got to undo, you know, in the future. So what are your plans as state party chair now? Like, what are the first steps you want to do? Because obviously there's no immediate fight back to that. I mean, I guess there is some immediate fight back to being able to stop the Constitutional Convention, hopefully. But what are the first steps that you need to start building the party and the strength in the party and the bench for the party that's going to be able to get us more progress down the road?
Well, look, and you said it very, very accurately. The problem that, what led to this problem, let's say take the last 10, 15 years, is that because the Republicans were so aggressive, that's their nature, okay? Predators are aggressive. So they were so aggressive that we spent the last 10, 15 years responding to a crisis. The crisis that we saw ourselves in as Democrats losing numbers. A lot of our Democratic voters who traditionally voted Democrat, even though they were registered Democrats, started voting Republican. So that really made us respond what I call an immediate knee-jerk response to say, okay, we got to try to do some things immediately to win these elections, okay? Without thinking about the elections down the road and how to build a bench and how to recruit the young people to start running for office from, you know, out of high school, out of college, how to recruit really young leaders, upcoming leaders in local communities to start running for office. And we missed that. I mean, I would say we didn't take advantage of that opportunity because we were so too busy trying to respond to the immediate crisis.
Right.
But that's my that's my plan. It's really rebuilding the bench, going back to the local levels, you know, just totally rebuilding the party, and not just rebuilding the party as a as an institution, but rebuilding the party as in terms of expanding our base. There are a lot of communities that what I would say were marginalized or overlooked and are still overlooked in our democratic dynamics, that we have to go back and engage those communities and show them why they matter. You know, why the issues that they're concerned about matter to us as Democrats. We really just have to rebuild the family. And speaking of family, and one of the things responding to your question in terms of building for the future is mobilizing and energizing and empowering the DPECs to go into these communities, to become a part of those communities. I would like to see them, not just that, typically they've organized right 6 months before the campaign, 3 months before the campaign, go to the campaign cycle and start deciding how they're going to turn out the vote, who they're going to back in the elections. But we right now, we're at a disadvantage because we're in a minority. We're coming from behind. We can't afford to restrict and limit ourselves just to operate during the political within the political dynamics. We have to step outside of that. We have to be really aggressive, really proactive, and start to show leadership in those communities. I'd like to see the DPECs be the liaison between the people in the communities and the government officials. Because once they start doing that and start taking on issues that are important in Brobridge, important in DeRidder, North Louisiana, and Jonesboro, and some of those places, once they get involved in the activities in those communities, start being there for those families, then those individuals that we reach out to, engage, and show leadership to, and provide solutions to, will become a part of our family. We won't have to ask them to vote Democrat. They're going to automatically vote Democrat because we've been there for them. We have to step outside that political limitations and go into the community activist arena.
100%. I mean, we hear that repeatedly during campaign seasons when we call people to ask them to go vote. Well, I only hear from you when you want me to go vote in an election. And so there has been this repeated, essentially, request from the voters for Democrats to be present before election day, before
absolutely
campaign season. So I think you're 100% right about that. We've talked a little bit about like the amount of talent you have that's coming up with you on the executive committee. There are a lot of new people, and not to disparage folks who have been doing the work for a long time, but there is a certain amount of energy that comes with people who are coming into the work now. I think it's nice to be able to have that combination of people with experience who have that institutional knowledge, and the new folks coming in that have the motivation and the energy to bring some newness and freshness to the organization. What are your thoughts on that?
I think that is so profoundly correct. I was at the Donkey Run last night, and I was just telling several of the legislators and just people I was talking to, I said, if I had to write a script and a profile for this recruitment, this class that joined the DSCC, I couldn't have written a better script. I couldn't have profiled them better. I mean, it's really beyond what I thought we would even get to step up to the plate. I mean, the best and the brightest from Louisiana among the Democrats have really answered the call to step up to the plate. I am so impressed with the level of talent that have that has come to bear, that have answered the call to turn this party around. And I guess I guess it was like an alarm went off all over the state, and they realized what was happening to the party. And because as goes the party, so go our rights.
That's
and
right.
So go our quality of life and the things that our values and our freedoms. And because we, as you can see, it's pretty vividly clear the harmful bills that's coming out of Baton Rouge. It's possibly going to get it's going to get worse. So I think that I'm just impressed with the talent that has stepped up to the plate. And so I told somebody, I said, if I had to try to build a team by recruitment, I said, no, this election showed that we're team ready. I mean, they just we have the right team, the right people. You know, we don't have to go through interviews and these people are talented and they're ready to hit the ground running. And I love it. So you know, the future is bright and you know, brighter days ahead.
And we talked a little bit too before we started recording about the potential of caucuses doing work with the party. And did you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, well, one of the things I was I consider, because there's so much talent and not enough seats, not enough actually bylaws only have so many offices that you can elect. We're going to have to create caucuses, special interest caucuses, and use some of that talent to be able to take leadership. Those people who didn't get elected to office, there's a place for them. And there's a there are initiatives and programs that they can take charge of because of the great expertise they have, their talents to augment what we're going to do as a party to really come to, that everybody can come together and just build a great party. I'm looking for us to build a party that's going to not only make positive changes in Louisiana, but get national attention for the level of effectiveness that we're going to be able to achieve for the organizing, for the transformative changes we're going to make in terms of registering voters, stressing the right to vote, reaching out to our communities. You know, I told John Bell, Governor John Bell, I told him about a month ago that I want Louisiana to be the poster child on how to turn around a party in the Deep South. And the fact that you said that there are people who work with Stacey Abrams campaign who are willing to join us and who want to give us that support, that's just incredibly aligned with the goals that we have as a party. And I mean, it's like destiny is lining up. All the stars are lining up.
I mean, there are a lot of people who want to help our state. Like, and you look at like the environmental and climate folks that are national groups who see us as ground zero because we are ground zero for the climate crisis. They see us as an opportunity to invest. And right, we've got the Fair Fight Action folks who are speaking to national groups who see an opportunity to invest here. So there's so much opportunity if we can capitalize on it. What do you see as like the first thing you want to do for bringing more money to the party? Because as we know, we can, I've seen the party in both ways, right? I've seen it with money to spend to organize, and I've seen it without money and how like a skeleton crew just really struggles to operate. And so I know that in order to run the programs we need to run, in order to register voters and mobilize voters and do the trainings that you need to do for this bench that you're building, it does require money. So what's your first thoughts on that? What's the first thing you want to do?
Yeah, I've said this before, that because I work with a national civil rights organization, people, and I said this at the Dr. King's organization meetings, I think people don't give money to pay your bills. They give money to make a difference. They give money to make changes. They give money to make a difference where no difference has been made. So we have to start, we're going to start raising what I call sustainment money. But to raise that enhancement money and that growth money, we're going to have to really just put some things in place that we could, when I make those calls, I can say, this is what we've accomplished. This is what we're doing. We want to talk about our plans, but I also want to talk about accomplishments to be able to draw that money in, because that's what one of my old sayings is that, you know, you don't go in playing the violin, you go in blowing the trumpet. Look, this is what we're going to achieve. This is what we have achieved. So that's one of my goals, is not just to start raising a sustainment money, but also raise national money that this party can flourish, and we can use that as seed money to turn to turn the state around. But to raise the national money, we're going to have to build a track record. We're going to raise some, but so initially, starting off, I think we're going to concentrate on the small donors through the messaging to the different communities, and just build a large cadre of small donors that can start to bring funds in. And as I said, we're going to also reach out to the national audience, so to speak, the national donors. I was in Chicago last week, and I had a chance to meet with the key fundraiser for the DNC. They've offered their help. They're going to provide some contacts that we can reach out to start to bring some immediate immediate money in. One of the things I'm going to do is I'm requesting a copy of, not just in the state, nationally, a copy of the biggest donors who typically give to the Democratic Party, those who have a track record of giving to the party. We're going to reach out to them first. Also, we're going to reach out to different, not just political organizations, PACs. We're going to reach out to foundations who also have given to the party, and to, you know, because they have an interest, particularly the environmental arena. They really have an interest in fighting some of the causes we're having to deal with here in Louisiana. The justice reform people, there are foundations that give money to justice reform, and they really give generously. So I don't think we've tapped into that, to those sources, to the extent necessary to be able to bring the money in that I know we have the potential to bring in. So basically, in response to your question, small donors and large donors, we're going to prioritize both, but also, with this great team, I'm waiting until we're going to have our first executive board meeting, committee meeting shortly, in the next few days. And once we put our framework together, start putting the strategy together, we're going to develop a fundraising brochure to talk about all the ideas and the compelling things that we're going to do to rebuild the party, and primarily use that to start bringing some immediate money in. But also, we're going to have a measuring method of measuring our performance, so that we can not just talk about what we plan to do, what we hope to do, what we are striving to accomplish, but I want to be able to show that, look, this is what we've done in voter registration. These are the organizations that we've partnered with, Power Coalition. This is what our DPECs are doing. We're going to have pictures. We're going to have records, documents showing the progress we're making. And at that point, I think fundraising is not going to be a problem.
That's so important to be able to, you know, because success begets success, right? So if you can start showing people that you've made this progress,
that's right,
you're going to invest in an organization that's doing stuff and can prove by metrics that it's actually doing things. And
exactly. Right? Yeah.
Like I always say, if you can't tell me the number of calls you made or the number of voters you turned out, if you can't give me that data, then I can't. It's all just feels. You're operating by feels, and that doesn't really help me assess anything.
It's like, you know, how do you measure? You know, we have to have some method of measurement, but also we have to be able to produce those measurements in a way that's compelling, you know, in an impressive way that show the kind of progress we're making. And that, I think that that's going to enable us to really bring in the big donors. And also, I know I'm going to talk to the governor. He is our top, you know, Democrat in the state right now. And of course, we also have Congressman Troy Carter. We have former Congressman, senior White House advisor, Cedric Richmond, who both, as of last week, pledged their support to help with the fundraising, to help bring money into the party. And so I'll have a conversation with the governor, because I think he's the biggest lightning rod at this point to be able to use his influence to direct force resources to the party as well.
Okay, I think one of your other things that you've got to, as the party, not just you individually, needs to work on is making people excited to be Democrats again, right? I mean, I think right now there are some people who just don't feel connected and don't feel the motivation to call themselves proud Louisiana Democrats. And I think that that's something that needs to be worked on also.
You know what? Obviously, you're clairvoyant, because as you were saying, make them feel excited. I was actually just writing the word excited.
Oh, okay. Okay.
We have to restore confidence. We have to restore enthusiasm within the party, but we also have to restore confidence in our base, confidence around the state. And that's one of the, when I was writing all the different scripts that I wrote during the campaign, talking about my plan for the party, is either, you know, the first thing that I would always say was that we have to restore confidence and trust in our party. And because, you know, that really confidence and trust builds unity.
That's right.
And we have to be united as a part of the party. As the, for the last 4 years, there was a lot of, as you know, a lot of dissension within the party, conflict. We can't afford not one day of that, because when you're in a minority or when you come from behind, you have to be good and better, but you also have to be unified. And we can't do this with different factions not operating together. So we have to build confidence. And look, it's not just confidence and enthusiasm is really the primary element to cause people to want to go out to vote. You know, people, I learned a long time ago, you can give people all the data. You can have facts, data, information, but two things that are important. They have to know that you really sincerely care. Other than that, none of that stuff matters. And you have to be able to have, they have to, you have to be able to get them excited and enthusiastic. People vote with their hearts. They vote based on how you make them feel about the things that matter. And we do it in a positive way. The Republicans will do it in a negative way, through fear, fear-mongering, divisive issues. That's what they do. And it the method works for them, but it's a race to the bottom. We can do so much better, you know, in a race to the top by using positive messages and getting people excited. I've always say that if you get it, I call it the four E's, you know, encouragement, enthusiasm, excitement, and empowerment. You know, if we can hit those four, we can turn out the vote. We want people to be, I was being overly ambitious about that, but I said, I want people to look forward to Election Day. I don't want to say, oh, yeah, we have to vote today. I guess I'll get over this at some point. No, I want them to be able to say, oh, we're voting on Saturday. I'm not making any plans. I got to go and vote. Maybe I'll do something after that.
I love that, though. It should be a holiday. It should be considered a holiday. Well, and right. So in order to get that message out, we have to raise enough money and have a good program to make sure people hear our message. And then I think the other thing that we've maybe lacked a bit of is contrasting ourselves to make sure that folks know the difference between voting for a Republican and a Democrat, right? If you're not contrasting and saying this is what we're for and this is how we're different, folks don't know why they need to go out and vote. That's some of the feedback I've heard from just voters in general. And the other thing about the party that I think is really important is that, again, more feedback is, you know, there are parts of the state where you have Democrats running against Democrats. And that's where I think some of the, you know, the divisiveness comes from, is because, but that's naturally going to happen in those Democratic strongholds, yeah. Right? Democrats are, yes. But where the party can be different is by not focusing in those areas and focusing in the areas through the rest of the state where there aren't enough Democrats elected. And there's so much opportunity there to really focus on those areas where we could potentially get a Democrat elected where there's a Republican now. And that, to me, is where the party could really make some inroads and find some unity, right?
Well, that's absolutely right. And that's what I was talking about earlier about the marginalized community, the communities either that we don't engage, that we're not engaged in, the communities that really, there are communities out there that may not be aligned with Democrats or Republicans. They're just overlooked. So we can use that to broaden our base. But no, we don't need to spend tons of money in Democratic, strong Democratic districts where Democrats are running against Democrats. We have to pick up new ground. It's not going to do us a lot of good to elect a few Democrats around the state with high record turnout and high winning numbers and losing everywhere else. So we have to just reprioritize our resources to gain new ground. One of the things that when I was fighting to raise money for the Democratic caucus, one of the first things that one of the major donors, which is the Trial Lawyers Association, their members, first thing they want is, okay, first thing they want to know is, all right, are we going to pick up new seats? That was their thing. That was their priority. Are we going to gain new ground? And that was the threshold we had to reach with them. That was the determining factor for them, whether or not they want to give. So, we have to broaden our base, aggressive voter registration. Reach out to communities that have been overlooked, because we have to increase our numbers and broaden our base, which it can be done. Georgia did. Well, I knew 6 years ago that Georgia was in a good position to turn blue because of the influx of people migrating into you know, the major cities, particularly Atlanta. But we don't have that. We don't have that migration into Louisiana like some of the larger states do. So we have to find our salvation in terms of saving the party. We have to be able to find those new voters who potentially become Democrats. We have to find them right here in our state, and they're there.
That's a good point. Well, I know you are a busy man, busier now than you already have been. You've told me your schedule today, so I don't want to keep you too long. So let me get, first of all, is there the best way for people, if they're listening, who want to plug into this sort of rebirth of the party, what's the best way for them to plug in now? Is it just to go to the website and sign up, or is there some other way you think folks should plug in?
Yeah, I would say go to the website, but also, we're going to be every community. We're going to distribute the names and contact information for the members of the DPEC. You can reach out to the DPEC. I'm going to have the party send out. We're going to go into the voter file, and I'm going to have the party. You know, this is going to be part of our messaging to send out contact information, messages to all the registered Democrats all over the state on a regular basis, 24/7, and it's going to have contact information on how you can give, how you can join, how you can get involved, get engaged. It's going to talk about our issues and what's important. So it's going to be a medium of exchange that we're going to establish between our voters and the party that's going to give them everything they need to know in terms of how they can get involved, how they can give, donate.
How they can get engaged, how they can donate.
How they can get in contact with us if they have an issue. But right now, until we get all this established, I urge them to go to the Democratic Party website and have all the contact information.
I'm going to put that in the podcast notes so people can find that link very easily. And I want to ask you the last three questions I ask a version of every episode. First of all, and these should be very easy for you. What do you see as the biggest hurdle for Democrats in Louisiana?
The biggest hurdle that we have right now is is being apathetic about voting and apathetic about getting involved with the Democratic Party. And I think that was a problem or issue of leadership. And I always say that our voters and our base, they're not apathetic, okay? Because apathy is not the absence of interest, it's the absence of leadership. So we need to, you know, we're going to give them that leadership to get them involved. And my other point I want to make is not to give up. Ask them, do not give up hope. Do not lose confidence in our party, because we're going to provide you the leadership that's going to be able to address the issues that are important to you at your homes, important to you with your families, important to you in your communities. We're going to develop messaging and solutions that reach you at your doorstep. Reach you where you live. So we're going to be the party of choice, the party that's going to make a difference for you. And because we're coming from behind, you know, this has to be a movement. We will no longer operate just in the Democratic, I would say the political dynamics of the political arena. We're going to step beyond that to fight for you for the things that, not to just to ask you to come out to vote, but fight for you for the things that make a difference at your homes and in the lives of your family, with family members. So don't be discouraged. Our job is to turn discouragement into determination, which we will do.
I love that. What's the biggest opportunity for Democrats in Louisiana?
Well, the biggest opportunity I see is to reach out to turn this state blue. It's not going to be easy to do, but look, it's a matter of how much energy we're going to put to it. I believe in laws of physics, where every action has an equal and opposite reaction. The Republicans are not destined to rule. So we have the base, we have the energy, we have the talent, and we have the right message and the right solution to turn this state around, to reclaim these positions for Democrats who care about what's important to our citizens, as opposed to the divisive, fear-mongering messages that the Republicans are putting out, such things as I think it's hypocrisy 101, because, you know, postulating and advocating for things like, well, you're pro-life, but you support the proliferation of lethal weapons. It's a philosophical contradiction. So we want to expose all the dangers and harm that the policies, as you can see, what's coming out of Capitol now, all these dangerous, harmful, divisive policies. We're the last line of defense for public safety, for personal rights, and we're the last line of defense for our democracy. And I ask everybody on this podcast to stand with us to turn this around, and stand with us to make sure that we protect the rights and the quality of life for all the citizens of Louisiana, not just a few, not just big business, but every citizen of this state. We're the last line of defense for that, and we will advance this cause to a level that you will be satisfied, and you will be your needs will be fulfilled, and your needs will be met.
100%. Thank you so much for that. And Chair Gaines, tell me who your favorite superhero is.
I would say Superman, but I think it was Batman. Because when I saw the episode that he was locked in a safe and all the bad guys walked away, thinking that it was done, and when the episode came back on, Batman was standing on top of the safe with his cape blowing in the wind, and that's what I see as the future for the Democrats.
I love that metaphor. That's wonderful. Chair Randall Gaines, congratulations on being elected chair of the Louisiana Democratic Party. I'm so grateful to you for stepping up, and I just look forward to great things in the future. And just let us know how we can help. We'll be there every time.
Now, Linda, you're great. Wonderful. I enjoyed you. You're an inspiration, and I appreciate having you help and support and your interest. Thanks.
Of course.
Thank you for listening to Louisiana Lefty. Please follow us on your favorite podcast platform. Thank you to Ben Collinsworth for producing Louisiana Lefty, Jen Pack of Black Cat Studios for our Super Lefty artwork, and Thousand Dollar Car for allowing us to use their Swamp Pop Classic Security Guard as our Louisiana Lefty theme song.